Welcome. I'm so glad that you guys are with us today. We have Sherry Wilson today who is going to talk about how to raise confident daughters. And so I love this topic. I'm so glad she's here. Welcome, Sherry.
Well, thanks, Millie. I'm glad to be here. It's humbling. Appreciate it.
Sherry is a wife, a mother, a life coach, and she's the director of admissions at Grace Community School. And she has a busy life, and she's raised great daughters. And so we're going to just glean from her wisdom today. So happy you're here.
Well, thank you. It's great.
I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your family before we start.
Okay. Well, I'm married to Scott. We'll be married 35 years in August. We hail from the West. We're not Texans. We're from Arizona. But we are, Millie, those people who got to Texas as soon as we could. So when we came to Texas, we just had Ethan, a baby, but then we birthed five Texans. So I have six children, two boys, they're the oldest, and four daughters. I have one wonderful daughter-in-law named Juliana. I have another daughter-in-law coming into the fold in August. Her name is Cassie. So I certainly have a lot of girls in my mix. My kids are range in age from 30 to 20 and are spread all over the United States. So I still have two in college, well, one in college, excuse me. Reagan will graduate in December.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. This is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, although I do not have girls of my own. I have a niece, and just in, you know, my practice, I have seen so many wonderful teenage girls over the years, particularly, and always trying to just instill in them how, you know, beautiful and wonderful they are. And I know as moms of daughters, you know, everyone is trying to raise really godly, loving, confident daughters. And so today I'd love to start our time and just talk about what are some challenges that you think our girls are facing right now?
Well, the privilege of doing this with you allowed me to ask my own daughters, who I told you range in age now from 27 down to Reagan being the youngest. She's my college student. And I found it very interesting that the girls collectively agree that there's nothing new under the sun. We kind of want to blame it on social media and telephones and things like that. But really what they told me is the same issue I deal with at age 59.
Wow.
Which is insecurity. A shaky sense of identity, and that those, I just thought that was very interesting, that there's really nothing new under the sun.
Right.
We are born, you know, and fragile from the beginning, and the girls just said social media complicates it. They're constantly confronted with images and comparisons and communications that are certainly not life-giving, but really probably that chief challenge is, who am I? Who am I truly? What is my identity founded in? Where do I get my strokes? What puts wind in my sails, you know?
Yeah, so it's some of the same issues that humans have been dealing with for a very long time.
Exactly, and the only thing I would add is, we know by God's design, I tell my girls often, we are the weaker vessel. Now, some people don't like maybe to hear that, but by God's design, the female needs a kind of support that's unique and different than the male. And so I think there is a fragileness in us from the get-go, and God has given us ways to secure that fragileness. But the fact is, we are, and as life progresses, if we are not secure in that identity and we don't have people in our corner reminding us of truth, we're subject, you know, we're at risk, really.
Yeah, that's so important to have people in our life that believe in us, that speak truth to us. And sometimes that can see things in us that we can't see in ourselves.
Yes, that is correct. Because we're always asking, am I smart enough? Am I pretty enough? Am I wise enough? Am I even a mom? Am I capable enough? We're always asking these questions in our mind. So yes, truth tellers, truth speakers in our life.
Right.
Very That's valuable.
So good. How do we as mothers guide them through these issues? That's something that I hear that question all the time. You know, this is the problem with my child. How do I help them? How do I guide them?
Well, particularly when we talk about if the chief struggle is identity and insecurity, this my first response to moms when they ask me that question and the first self-inventory I do is I cannot give what I do not have.
That's great. Yeah.
So always in this area of speaking life into our children, telling them things that are true about them, we have to ask, well, do I tell myself that? Do I believe that to be true about myself? Is my identity secure? Do I really know who I am in Christ first and foremost?
Yeah.
Am I measuring myself against the world standard? Am I always scrolling through social media and making commentary in front of my children about that and what I'm seeing? So I don't know that we can be successful in guiding them through challenges unless we ourselves are always growing in this area.
Mm-hmm. So look at yourself first.
Look at yourself first.
And then try to instill those things in your child.
Right. And I think we have to speak that over and over. One of my daughters used that word like a discipline. If it has to be done daily. It isn't just a one and done. When they're little, you plant the seeds in them. It is an ongoing every day as God leads, right as you rise up, as you walk by the way, as God gives you moments of intersecting their life, to be affirming them appropriately, naturally, Millie. I am not talking about a manufactured or contrived method. You know, something I thought of when I considered challenges or how to guide them through them is while these things are true about us, I think sometimes as mothers, we want to insulate them from the heart.
Right.
And I would say, don't. You're there already as a safe haven for your daughters, but hard is not bad. And the fact that social media bombards them with images and measurement and all of that is just a part of culture.
Right.
And so how do we help them walk in it and navigate it, set up healthy boundaries? All those things are pertinent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we want to sometimes overcompensate and not let them work through the hard.
It's hard to watch our kids suffer, whether they're 2 years old or 22 or 42.
Correct.
It is hard for moms to watch their kids suffer, but that is when God grows them. That's when they really begin to have those aha moments where they learn about themselves and they grow in the Lord.
Correct. You know, my daughters, as they were growing and, of course, encountered everything you can imagine that a girl would encounter, we would use these expressions sometimes. You know, girls, when you put your hair in a ponytail, it's like something happens to you. And we would just make this analogy for them. If we understand that this is hard or you're vulnerable or you're insecure, whatever it is. But boy, when you put your hair in a ponytail, you really turn into something special. And it was just, my girls were athletes. And so that was a good analogy for them because they knew there has to be a decision point. You have to help them learn how to make those decision points. Okay, this is when I kind of pull myself up appropriately and I walk in the hard and I ask for help, you know, and I see God work. That's the most amazing part, Millie, is when we see our children suffer and when we walk along with them in the hard and then they see God work, well, then you're already a step ahead in the next trial.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What are some of the mistakes that you think parents are making? And I say that as a parent.
Right, because we make them
We make them every day, and I'm hoping that we learn from those. But what are some of the mistakes right now that you see parents making with specifically girls?
Right, yeah. I was thinking specifically about girls. Okay, this was right off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I want to encourage moms
yes.
to not Instagram their daughters' lives. This is where social media adds complexity.
Okay.
It's a wonderful thing. We know things like Instagram are just neutral. Mm-hmm. It's not good or bad in itself. It's just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lovely tool. I think sometimes as I watch and I see what's out there, that could be a tripping point, that we Instagram everything, and I'm not sure if that's coming out of our own personal insecurity or somehow it's validating an action we're doing or an experience we're giving them. Could be about experiences we're giving them. It's a caution. It's not a heavy no. It's just take inventory. Think about how you interact with social media tools and how it relates to your daughter, because you're putting her out there every time, or you're encouraging her to put herself out there. It's both and. Probably when they're little, it's more about us putting them out there. And as they mature, they've watched us do that. So again, they just watch what we do and they live like we live and they respond like we respond.
Mm-hmm. So helping girls navigate the boundaries of what is worthy of posting and what may be a private moment that doesn't need to be posted.
Doesn't even need to be posted. Okay. And isn't it fun to have private moments? And those private moments can be as simple as having coffee with your mom. Yeah. Somewhere, in other words, do we have to put it out there every time? And I think sometimes it's just a habit. We've formed a habit, maybe, mm-hmm. of doing that. It's not inherently intended to be a negative. It's just a caution, like I said. Another one with girls that I've spoken about many times as I raised my four girls was allowing our daughter's progression, especially hormonally, to be an excuse for a lack of self-control.
Okay. Unpack that.
So what I mean by that is, obviously, we are women. We progress and mature physiologically and socially and spiritually in all dimensions. And we can be emotional, Millie. Can you be emotional? I can. And that's okay. That's part of how God's wired us, and we respond and react to lots of things. I feel like sometimes a mistake is, as our daughters are trying to figure that out, they're trying to even understand their own emotions, as they're trying to navigate the welling up of fear, anxiety, sadness, anger, whatever it is, and it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for us as moms to watch them navigate this. We can sometimes dismiss it away as, well, it's just their hormones. They're just maturing. They're in the season of life. When in fact, as grown women now, Millie, you and I both know that if we walk into the workplace and we're having a hard morning, or our emotions are welling up inside of us, it would be very inappropriate for us to come in a room, slam a door, use expressions that would not be professional, or any of that. We would never allow that to happen, nor would we do that.
Right.
But for some reason, as parents, we sometimes give more room than should be given. Should a child be able to express themselves? Yes. Should a daughter who's having emotions and feelings and sadness cry and even be angry and stomp? Yes. Can they do that within the limits of appropriateness and self-control and still be respectful, still go to a place where they need to process that? Yes. Those are all skills that we teach them.
That's great.
But when I talk to moms of especially adolescent girls, that seems to be a tough spot. They will describe their daughters as, they'll say to me, it must be terrible to have four girls, because what they're doing is attaching those moments of emotion to, you must have it nonstop. And I can say, well, we have them, but we're learning to manage them, and we have learned to manage them.
Teaching that as a skill, a lifelong skill.
A lifelong skill.
That's great.
And not dismissing it away, like I said.
That's great.
Yeah.
Any other mistakes that you would say you see parents making, you've made when raising girls?
Yes, I even ask my girls, what mistakes have I made, and where do I know I always have opportunities for growth. I'm going to say probably universally all of us moms, whether we're parenting boys or girls, but maybe girls even more so, is we need to listen more than we speak.
And
I'm a words person, Millie. I have lots of them. And I think God's given me lots of them.
Yeah.
But I also know God tells me to listen twice as much as I speak. And so that was the first thing I owned when I was talking to my girls about it, is I know I need to listen to you more before I speak. Mm-hmm. Words of encouragement, guidance, counsel, whatever it is. So moms, we just need to not allow our fears and our anxiety, our own personal anxieties, concerns overwhelm us. Just listen, let the Holy Spirit give us direction, and then move.
That's so good. Something that I am always working on, and I do poorly at times, is to say to my boys, what do you think? What do you want? How do you see this? And you would think that would be something that I would be good at by now, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a struggle for a lot of parents, is that we want to tell our kids what we think, and we want, out of fear sometimes, we want to warn them, don't do this, do this. But yet we forget to say, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And to listen to what that response is.
Right. To even ask them, what do you think the best course of action is?
Right.
What would be a better decision, even as they're processing about other friends? You know, girls talk a lot. They talk more than boys, naturally.
Right.
Now, some daughters, I have daughters that are more reserved and daughters that are more extroverted. So the benefit of being a mom of daughters is we do get to have probably more conversations than moms, and I have sons, than I would have had maybe with my boys.
Right.
But that's where we stumble, is probably not letting them have enough room to just share. And my girls over and over again told me, Mom, we want to have vulnerable conversation with you.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting. We want to be able to be vulnerable with you.
That's great. Was there a time when any of your girls started to pull away from you, maybe junior high, high school?
That's a great question. I don't know that I've ever had a season where they completely pulled back. But again, yes, in that as they were discovering kind of what their style and the way they communicate and how they get refueled. Yes, you know, Millie, a thought's coming to my mind. I think one of the things we have to do that might then speak to as they pull away, if we've become a student of our daughters, we really understand how God has wired them. Are they an introvert? Are they an extrovert?
Yeah.
Do they get refueled by going away from me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not personal.
Right.
Versus being with me. I have some that are fueled by being with, some that are refueled by going away. And I had to learn that.
Yeah.
Because in those teenage years or early adolescent, even college, early college years, if one of them came in the house and disappeared to the basement for days, you might want to ascribe, oh, they don't want to be in relationship with me. When in fact, it's just their way of refueling, and they feel secure. Someone is there present with them. So I had to learn those things, you know, versus did I have one that would distance themselves maybe relationally from me from angst? We've had plenty of angst and worked through lots of angsty moments, you know.
Yeah.
But I think our family works hard at reconciliation.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's so good to be a student of your child, know your child. And so as we do these podcasts, we will continue to do more on mental health.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know if my teenager is depressed? How do I know if my child is struggling with anxiety? And I think that's a good foundation, just to say, know your child. Have these conversations, take time, as a mom, put your phone down and look into your child's eyes and talk with them.
I would love, look in the eyes, because I had written something down about that. I grew up in a large family. I'm one of five, three girls and two boys. And my mother was the oldest of nine. And she, if my mom was sitting here with us, she would say my Achilles heel was insecurity and identity and self-esteem. She didn't come to faith until she was in her mid-50s. So then God really opened her eyes as to who she was. But even with that, reality of her not being a believer until her mid-50s, she knew something had to be different as she began to raise her children. And a practice that my mother had that I do often with my own kids is many times when we were little, big, grown adult, she would say, Sherry, I need you to look at me. I need you to look at me right here in my eyes and draw me. you know, and we would laugh and giggle because she did it so much. And then she would just speak some sentence of truth. You're amazing. Do you know how beautiful your green eyes are? And just speak a word of affirmation or truth. Well, that's powerful. My mother raised five confident children when she did not have the pool from which to pull from. But she knew enough to think there's got to be something different here. Someone wasn't speaking words of life into me. So with my girls, same thing. You know, I just the other day, naturally, I'll do that. And one of my daughters responded and said, did you see my hair, Mom? Because I said something along the lines of, look at how beautiful the two of you are, because the two sisters were together in Nashville. And I wasn't looking at their appearance. I was just looking at those faces, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's such a gift to be seen. I think so many times in our world, in general, we feel very unseen.
Correct.
And so giving that to our kids is a true gift.
It is a gift.
That's good.
Yes.
That's great. So as we move along, how do we help our girls make good choices? And I would love to pick your brain on dating, how you as a mom of a teenager navigate dating, and maybe even how you navigate choices in clothing, because that seems to be, I don't have girls, but I have friends with girls, and that seems to be something that they struggle with.
Right. Well, that's a packed question.
I know,
right? It is, because we make choices. I always say life is a series of choices.
Yeah.
With the good and the bad consequences that come with them. So I think that's a long journey. Good choice making, again, is modeled first.
That's good.
Do they watch me make good choices? So here's an example. Often as parents, we want our heart's desires to see our children grow in faith, to be spiritual people. But then I have to ask, am I a spiritual person? Do I do the things that grow me spiritually?
Mm.
I want my daughter to dress modestly.
Yeah.
What do I dress like? You know, what's my standard for that? What is modesty, not modest? And just teaching them those things. So much of good choice making is them watching me make good choices. Not perfect choices.
Right.
But just what characterizes, and that's what we often say to our kids, what characterizes you? Because sometimes you make a choice that's, it's not a wrong choice. It might just not be a best choice. Again, there's a differentiation there. You know, right and wrong versus good, better, and best.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because clearly we have things and moral values and principles where it's a very clean, this is a wrong, and this is a right. When it comes to clothing, it's probably more good, better, and best for most of us. Right? I mean, that you can wear that, but what would the best choice be? And it starts when they're little, and mom guiding and directing that. I would say, Millie, sometimes a mistake if we went backwards a little bit for a minute with our little girls is giving them too much choice too early.
Okay.
Rather than just guiding them, I always say kids are ready for choice when they're okay with not having one.
Okay.
So let's say clothing and the battles that take place even in the preschool years over clothing, instead of mom being a little more directive in that season and teaching and establishing some patterns.
Right.
And then as we move up into adolescence, first of all, we're okay with hearing no, right? Because they're ready for choice because they're okay with not having one.
Right.
So they maybe have heard some boundaries that mom and dad have set, and they may not like it, but they'll respect it.
Okay.
So, you know, those are all just principles that tie in, I think, when you're talking about clothing or friendship, because I wrote friendship down. Who, show me with whom you walk, I'll tell you who you are.
Okay.
How do we talk about the kinds of friends that grow us? You know, we'll use the expression, who's your wingman?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the person in your corner that's in the teen years going to call you out when you're not really doing what you said you would be doing, or you're not where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there? Or the college age friend who's going to help set the boundaries when you've got a lot of autonomy, you know? So building French. So when they learn those patterns of good decision making, then it gets to choosing a spouse or a date, you know, for that matter. I just think you've hopefully are building enough communication pattern that you're able to speak into it. I would my style, Millie, would not be to put hard and firm. And I've learned a lot. Sure, certainly in my early years of parenting, you feel like you need to control more.
Right.
Having six children, you learn a lot. And you learn that, you know, control is never a good strategy in general, but rather guardrails. Talk about the guardrails.
Yeah.
What do you want? We've had the girls write out kind of who's your best man when you think of that. Well, then when you frame up all these people you're going to meet in the future, is he lining up with what you said would be your best match? You back to Millie, you saying, what do you think? What do you feel? How do you see it? So whether that's in a formal exercise or it's just a time over iced tea or coffee, whatever those patterns are between a mom and a daughter, getting them to talk that out so that you don't have those collision course conflicts. You're going to have conflict, Millie.
Right, and that's not a bad conflict. Thing.
It's not a bad thing, and I think it actually is a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
because it teaches us something about ourselves, and it helps them learn how to navigate hard conversations.
Right.
You know.
And what has surprised me throughout the teenage years is how many hard conversations we have to have. And we are still having,
right.
And I would assume we will continue to have.
Right.
And I think as parents, sometimes we get tired.
Mm-hmm.
And we get tired of a particular fight that we're having
Correct.
With our teenager. But we can't grow weary. We can't grow weary of doing good. We have to continue to have that, because nobody else in their life is going to have those kinds of conversations with them.
Right.
That really is only the parent's role to have some of these conversations.
Mm-hmm. You are 100% correct. And staying in it, and that's where I'll use an expression, Scott and I'll often say, time is our friend. Might not be time to have the conversation right now, but at some point there will be a conversation. So time is always your friend, especially in the teen years and early adulthood years.
Yeah.
There's very few times where it's a 911 has to be dealt with at that moment, because usually emotions are high or feelings are strong. So if we can use time as a buffer and a friend, then we usually can collect our thoughts. We have better words to say. And we're not as tired, honestly. But you're right, Millie, in that the conversations are ongoing, and what a privilege, because as they grow into young adults, and now they have families, I have sons that are a son married with two children.
Yeah.
They come around and they ask for guidance, and they're looking for wisdom.
That's great.
They're getting their bearings, and they're looking for the wise counselor. So stay the course. That's all
stay
I can say. Stay the course, moms.
That's right.
Do not grow weary. And if you're weary, go get a friend and get coffee, or sit, tell somebody you're tired and take a break.
I think that's a good word for moms, is to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That parenting is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It is supposed to be hard at times, and it's going to make you tired. We can't give up. We just have to take good care of ourselves.
Yes. Correct.
Particularly during some of the more challenging times of parenting. It's good to have a friend to call and say, hey, I'm exhausted.
Right.
I need somebody to talk to.
So in my girls' teen years, I'll tell you a little club I formed, and I'll invite anybody listening to join the club with me. I've shared it often, and it's a very true story. As my kids were in early adolescence and then moving on up, I realized my parenting, whether it was my boys, but particularly the girls, was all about what I said, what I didn't say, when I said it, when I didn't say it. I realized my parenting was changing from mechanical things. I was still driving them around and doing logistics. But as far as influence, it was about my words. It was about modeling my life and then what I said to them. And so that takes a lot of self-control.
Yes.
And I'm a rewards person, Millie. I know when I'm trying to build a skill, I personally reward myself. And so I formed in my teenage children's years my Starbucks Rewards Club, because I like Starbucks. So there are many moments I could recall for you right now. My children don't know them. They'll laugh if any of them listen to this. Of moments where there was discussion happening that was challenging. And God, I was having a vertical dialogue with God. having a horizontal conversation with a child, and if I exercised self-control and I guarded my words and I said the things that I felt the Holy Spirit told me to, or I didn't say the things that I wanted to say, I would very promptly let the child out of the car or wherever I was at, and I would drive immediately to Starbucks and buy myself Starbucks. And it became my rewards club. And as my kids would sit in the stands and play in sports, and I would talk to mothers of daughters, I would tell them about this, and many times sent them a Starbucks card. Because we need each other. We need to laugh. That is the other thing I would tell you, Millie, is we've got to laugh.
Yeah.
You have got to have a sense of humor. You have got to laugh. And you just cannot take yourself too seriously. And you need to keep skill building. And if it's Starbucks, then do it.
Lots of ups and downs, lots of twists and turns. One moment you can be on a high in parenting, and the next moment it's a definite low. And so I love that. Just, you know, not taking yourself too seriously, guarding your words, but also rewarding yourself when you do it right.
When you do it right.
That's
and celebrate that. As parents, we don't celebrate enough with each other when we do it right. We carry a lot of burden with us, and parenting is hard because we're very private about it most of the time. And if we're brave enough to kind of get out there and ask a question or ask for support, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But a lot of times we don't celebrate the things we do right enough either, because we don't want to make somebody feel bad, or if they're struggling. That's crazy. We need to celebrate. I've got this figured out. Can I show you or help you or talk to you about it?
Yeah.
You know?
I think this has been great. I could probably sit here all day and just chat with you and hear stories about your kids growing up. You have a beautiful family, and thank you for sharing that with us today.
Well,
we all want to raise kids who have a good sense of who they are, a good sense of identity, that are secure.
Right.
And I think there are specific challenges for our girls these days. So thank you for having this conversation. Let's think about, before we leave, maybe some questions, I'll put you on the spot, that you might ask your daughter if you were wanting just to open up some conversation. So for those listening, and let's say they are a mom of a daughter that's maybe middle school to high school age, what are some questions they could ask their daughter that would just open up a good conversation?
That's good. I know we are inclined to ask yes and no questions. So first of all, we have to build the skill of asking an open-ended question. Those are hard. I don't know why they're so hard.
They are hard.
I love the question, what are the concerns of your heart today, honey?
Oh, I love that.
That might be a good one even in the car on the way to school.
That's great.
And say, we might not have enough time to unpack that, but at least I can be praying about that concern today. And then maybe after school. And they may say, I don't have any concerns today. Well, great, then we've got a lot to celebrate.
Right.
If they did share something, one, you can pray with them right then and there as they go out the door. And as they get back in the car, or you re-engage them in the evening, to say, let's not forget what you told me was a concern of your heart.
Mm.
You know, what makes you anxious? I think anxiety, Millie, we know.
Yes.
Anxiety is a major player today. What are you anxious about today? Why does it make you anxious, you know? And then what are you celebrating? What was the highlight? We do a lot of highs and lows in conversations. What was the highlight of your day? I think they want to share. That's what my girls were saying. We want to be vulnerable. We want to be able to celebrate, but we want to talk about our failures.
Yeah.
And I think if our children always feel like they're trying to measure up, and we are not being cognizant of it's okay to fail, which I think we all say it is okay to fail, but are we allowing them to talk about those failures or mistakes?
Right.
And the mistake is just a mistake.
Right.
And we can move past it because we can move past it. You know,
you made a mistake. You are not a mistake.
You are not a mistake.
Yeah.
And we say often, the mistake isn't what defines you. It's what you do with the mistake.
Yeah.
Right? That's all of those are skills that we practice and then we give them. And I would say this as we wrap up. If we're looking for a confident daughter who understands who she is in Jesus first and foremost.
Yeah.
She understands her place in the family.
Yeah.
She knows I'm unique. I have four of them, four unique daughters. They are not all cut out of the same mold. They have to know I see each of them uniquely different.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would say is help cultivate in them a sense of purpose. Give them purpose. Millie, help them from little girlhood into adulthood. What is God calling you to do today? So my girls are very accustomed to hear me today, present tense to them, whether it's in a text, a phone call, a face-to-face. Go mad today, Sydney. Go mad, Riley. Go mad, Reagan. Go mad, Tori, which just simply means go make a difference.
That's great.
So now I've got Juliana, my daughter-in-law, and Harper, my little granddaughter, and Big Daddy is Scott, so we're Honey and Big Daddy. And we'll say to Harper and Silas, well, we're going to go make a difference today, Harper. And you just infuse in them, I have a purpose. Every day when I go to school, when I interact, whatever it is, it's much bigger than a test or what I'm wearing.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's a good word to end on. And I love that question. What are the concerns of your heart today?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much
being
here.
Thanks for having me.
If you guys would like to sit down and talk with someone, we're ready at Solace Counseling and Anxiety Center. Just give us a call and make an appointment. We'd love to sit with you and talk about some of the concerns that are on your heart. We also want to thank Grace Community Church for partnering with us and making this podcast available. Thanks so much, Sherry.
Thank you, Millie.
Bye-bye.
Bye.